is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Star fam, welcome back to Stargirl After Show, sponsored as always by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties while they last. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
This week, we're talking about Frenemies Chapter 11, The Haunting, directed by Jennifer Pong, who did Season 1, Episode, I want to say like 9.
Okay.
I'm guessing that somewhere around there. And written by Steve Harper and Maytal Shutt in her first TV writing credit.
Oh, that's exciting.
She was, other than James Robinson, my main point of contact in the writer's room.
Oh, very cool.
And this was her first opportunity writing alongside the great Steve Harper, who wrote an episode just a few weeks ago that was incredible as well. Because have any of them not been incredible?
Not that I've seen.
Anyway, so yeah, congrats to Maytal. She's really great, and I'm glad that she got this opportunity. And she might have been a full time writer had we gotten a season 4, but I guess we'll never know at this point. But great things happening for her, and I'm very happy for her.
I love going on Twitter, and this happened a lot with Tom Swift. They had a lot of first-time TV writers, and they are genuinely so happy. And I went to school for screenwriting, so I get so excited when I see everyone. So I'm going to have to go check out to see if Maytal is on social media.
Can I address social media real quick?
Sure.
I want everyone to know that we're going to do one more episode after the finale. It's going to be a farewell to Stargirl, and we're going to have as many voices from the show as we possibly can on to have their goodbyes. And once that's out, I'm nuking Twitter. Twitter will be gone from my life. I will post links in the meantime to where else you can find me and Sarah if she would like on the internet, but I can't deal with Twitter anymore.
That's fair.
Officially announced. I mean, I already tweeted about it, but that seems ironic.
Yeah, but you can always find us on Instagram and a little bit on Facebook.
I don't really go on Facebook, and I'm bad at Instagram, but I am thinking about maybe a Discord.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And I'm all over Reddit.
All right, so you guys will be able to find us somewhere.
Yeah. Twitter's always been kind of a garbage fire, but now it's like a garbage fire that's encroaching on my personal living space.
Yeah.
Like a worse garbage fire, like a garbage fire in my lawn. All right, moving on. Sarah, why don't you just take us into the episode?
All right, we start off 1 year ago. It's the end of season one battle between Icicle and the new JSA. We see it end with Mike coming in and hitting Icicle and him shattering into a bunch of different ice cubes. And then it kind of speeds up time and we see the ice melt, turn into water, and all that water is joining together and running into the sewer.
And I mean, look, isn't that exactly what we called back in season one?
Yeah, no body. Not really dead.
When you have an ice guy that gets crushed into crushed ice, that's the obvious way for them to survive.
Yeah.
They didn't have to go too far out of the box for this, but you know, we still didn't see it coming.
I did not see this one coming at all.
I mean, we always saw how it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a good job surprising us out of left field.
Yeah.
The first time I read the script, I was like, oh my God, for last episode, not this episode, because that would be weird if I read last episode and then I read this episode and was still surprised somehow.
Yeah, that would be a little concerning.
I also want to bring up, I have since watched last week's episode with my wife, and she is mad.
She should be.
Yeah. We're watching it, and as soon as Croc kissed Artemis on the phone to congratulate her, she went, oh no.
Yep.
And then at the end, the credits are rolling, and she just goes, I'm so mad.
Yeah.
Mad is the way to be.
I don't think I'm mad. I think I'm more just sad.
Yeah, it's a real bummer.
When I was flipping through my notes, I caught the end of last episode and just seeing the finding the flyers for Rip City leading to the manhole cover. And I'm like, oh no. Just relived it.
Yeah, I mean, I have been thinking about it like here and there throughout the week. It's maybe one of the most impactful TV deaths I've ever seen. I won't say the most impactful, because there have been some pretty impactful TV deaths, but it's like really up there.
It is. Along those lines, we're back to current times, and Rip City is closed. All these people are trying to go for their morning workout and can't get in. And the camera pans from up in the gym down to the tunnels, where we see Jordan kind of shaking, and he pulls off his glove and his ice hand is incomplete.
Dude, it looks so good.
Yeah.
That looked like a legit, like, melty, like a hand made out of ice that had melted some.
It looked really good. Yeah, it was very believable. And he does a great job acting. Like, he is really struggling. And it's so different from first season Icicle, how confident and cocky he was.
Yeah, so he's, like, still struggling just to maintain his human form at this point.
All right, and then we go over to Courtney's house. First off, I love her sweater. Black and white. Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, there's no shades of gray there. There's just the good and evil, you know, all that yin-yang kind of stuff. I thought that was great. But she's talking about how they're accusing Ultra Humanite, that it must be Ultra Humanite that has been watching them and that killed the gambler. So we need to get everyone together, including Grandma and Grandpa Icicle.
Yeah, she's making her case for everyone to come together. And, you know, as always, she's still having to, like, drag people on board with her idea to get everyone together.
Yeah, Yolanda's like, why do we need Cindy back?
But look, what the scene's really about is Joel McHale's Donkey Kong noises.
That was amazing.
1981, guys. The 1981 guys was definitely an ad lib.
Yeah.
As were the sound effects.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, the line was, as scripted, was just, you know, if we lose, it's game over. And then they have their argument.
Yeah.
About banter, which also was great, because that moment of silence, he's like, oh, is that what you wanted? Just a real serious talk that scares the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
So good. I also liked his sweater. Pat's sweater, that is.
Yeah, with the little one stripe thing.
Yeah, it's got like the one stripe and it turns into like blue from red.
Yeah.
It was a new look for him.
Wasn't just his puffy vest. Is that what Sylvester made fun of last episode? Yeah,
I'll bet you my red boots and one of Pat's puffy vests. I'm sure some other stuff was said in this scene, but like all I really care about is the Donkey Kong thing. Honestly, it was hilarious.
Yeah, the one important thing is Courtney is saying we need to get Cameron in to help us. And Mike's like, no, what if he finds out and then that I killed his dad and then he, you know, kills me? And Courtney's like, well, that's not going to happen because they think that I did it. And she doesn't say like, hey, I took the blame for you.
Yeah, everyone was shocked.
Yeah. And she was just like, you know, it's not important. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. So actually, this is really important. Probably, maybe, possibly even more important than the Donkey Kong thing.
I think they're even.
Well, because she took the fall for Mike, or took the rap for Mike, and she doesn't even like want any recognition for that.
Mm-mm.
You know, she's not trying to earn brownie points with the gang. We're like, hey, I did something to save my little brother's life or protect my little brother. It doesn't matter. They think I did it. Mike's in the clear. Let's move on. Love that. That's some real selfless hero stuff right there.
It really is. It's classic Courtney.
Very subtle, but very Courtney.
And then we get the knock and Artemis is at the door.
These people are always so nervous when someone knocks on their door.
Well, it's fair. At least, well, I guess I don't know if she locked it.
Well, I mean, let's be fair. Courtney's mask is just for fashion.
Yeah, it's true.
Everybody knows who she is.
All right. And then we go over and see Jordan's homecoming. Lily and Sophus are so happy. I love Sophus's reaction. He can't even speak. He's just so happy and goes and hugs him. I thought that was very cute.
Yeah, they really killed it in that scene. And I'll, like, that's all it is. It's just like, I'm home and they're like awash in the endorphins of that. And there's really nothing else to that scene.
Yeah.
And like, I just was watching it and I just sort of like basked in like what that must feel like. The closest thing I could think of it would be like someone that you know that's in the military, like a family member in the military suddenly comes home unexpectedly mm-hmm. without announcing that they're going to.
Yeah.
That's the closest I can think of because I don't think there are a lot of people who have had a dead loved one turn up on their doorstep.
No, that's probably pretty rare.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The ones where the parents come back and surprise their kids at school, those videos on YouTube, they get me every time.
Oh, that's funny. I was thinking about the ones where the dogs rush up.
Oh, well, yeah, that too.
We have different experiences in life.
But one difference, I think, is Cameron doesn't immediately go to hug him because I think he's processing what Courtney is telling him and recognizing that. And so he is very hesitant, but still, you know, his dad's back and he's happy.
Also, he's young. He's probably seen some zombie movies.
True.
You got to be a little cautious.
And then we go into this study and Jordan's talking, you know, about all the snow globes and how he brought them back for Cameron's mom to honor her.
Yeah. And I'm just like, Jordan, Hunter already explained all that to us. You just slow your roll. He did notice one was missing, though. The one that Cameron broke early in the season.
Yeah, the Courtney one.
Yeah, the one with the girl that looked just like Courtney in it. Cameron's like, yeah, shut up about the snow globes. Where the hell have you been? Why weren't you here? Why did you let us think you were dead?
Which, all fair questions.
Yeah. I do like the idea that he basically was dead in that he had no consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a puddle. And despite what the Wonder Twins would have you believe, there are no neurons in a puddle.
Yeah.
Wonder Twins, real deep cut for you guys from the Super Friends. They were twins, and one of them could turn into an animal, and the other one could turn into something water-based. They were pretty worthless powers for pretty worthless characters that were going to have a movie, but then it got canceled like 12 minutes after it was announced.
That's a shame.
Well, they cast a couple of white people and those characters were Asian. And it was like, what are you doing in 2022?
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm glad that they made that decision then.
So, yeah, I think that Icicle's explanation holds water. I was trying to think of another phrase and I just couldn't think of one.
I think it's perfect there.
The pun was absolutely not intended, I assure you. I feel bad about having accidentally made it.
Cameron tells Jordan that Courtney told him what happened and that she killed you. And Jordan's like, no, she didn't kill me. It was Mike. So I'm immediately like, oh, this can't be good.
Yeah, like totally just throws Mike under the bus. I'm doing it again.
Cameron still is believing Courtney, saying that she said that you killed people and he doesn't deny it. He said that his goal was always to help people. You know me.
Yeah.
I thought I did.
It's almost like a non-denial denial.
Yeah.
It's like saying my goal was always to help people, as if he anticipates that Cameron is going to interpret that as I tried to help people, not murder them. Of course I didn't murder people without actually saying I didn't murder people. But Cameron's kind of seeing through it, I think.
So later in the episode, we see that Jordan is lying to people, but he doesn't actually say a lie to Cameron. So it could be that that's his weakness, is his family. I mean, that's what he always preached about, but he doesn't want to actually lie to Cameron.
Yes, could be.
And he said that Courtney helped him to see they want the same thing. They want peace. Well, he doesn't say peace, that they want the same thing. And Sophus is like, you want peace, right? Right. And then Jordan's like, yes.
Courtney inspired me. We want the same thing, to murder our enemies and drive them before us. Just like Courtney.
Yeah.
I do love that he is not the first bad guy this season that has talked about Courtney's influence on making them want to turn over a new leaf. Just last episode, prior to their murder, the Crocs were saying the same thing to Lily and Sophus.
Yeah, Jordan's been watching. He knows how to manipulate people. And he knows that people have a soft spot for Courtney.
So you don't think that Jordan is being sincere?
No, since he lied about, oh, I thought that the Crocs were attacking me, when he's the one that lured them down there.
Did you ever think he might be being sincere?
Up until he said that it was an accident that he killed them, because it clearly wasn't.
You know, obviously knowing all along that he wasn't sincere, I'm just curious how people interpreted that. Because clearly they sort of want people to think maybe he's sincere right until the end.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I didn't know for sure if he was teaming up with Ultra Humanite. At the beginning, I think I was hopeful that he was turning a new leaf. But then as soon as he said the thing about the Crocs and lied about it, then I was like, oh, okay, no, he hasn't changed. And then Ultra Humanite at the end, I thought they may still be enemies and he may try to team up, but then he would turn on them.
Did you at any point question whether he intended to kill the Crocs?
No, I think he meant to.
Yeah, I think the flyers,
yeah,
acting as a lure for them really takes away any doubt there.
Speaking of, Beth is tracking the signal from Sportsmaster's mask and finds it under Blue Valley, and they drop down that same tunnel.
Now, this is a new they, because we got Courtney, Yolanda, Beth, and Artemis. Rick is not answering any of Beth's calls.
Shouldn't someone else try calling him?
I mean, he's probably just not going to answer anybody's calls.
Maybe, yeah.
But, you know, him and Beth have the closest connection, and so she's the one that typically reaches out to him because hashtag Our Night.
Oh, I'm not on board with hashtag Our Night anymore. Not after he yelled at her.
I mean, he's kind of yelled at everybody always.
Yeah, well, I'm not on board with him with any of them.
That's fair. So Artemis, like, actually with the team, because of course they're trying to find her parents. So of course she's going to be there.
And a few discussions as they're going about, you know, should we suit up? And Courtney doesn't have the staff because Sylvester's off with it, trying to track down Ultra Humanite.
At which point my mind immediately went, is this going to be four straight episodes with no Cosmo?
Yeah, but he showed up.
He did. And I was very excited.
Very angry Cosmo.
I was like, there's Cosmo.
Artemis does say that if Lily and Sophus were involved with her parents' disappearance, that she would skin them alive. So that's a little frightening.
So when they get in and they find the croc dust, yes, I'm going to call it croc dust. I want to point out Courtney's reaction when Beth says that it's human remains.
Mm-hmm.
It was so real. It seemed like Breck just found out those were, like, that they had actually murdered the actors.
Yeah.
Joy and Neil to make that, like, she caught me off guard with how, like, just unexpected that was.
Well, yeah, because you expect the big reaction from Artemis, but not, you weren't expecting it from Courtney. But of course, Courtney feels that.
But it's not like over the top, right? It's just like, oh my God.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just a tiny little moment, but it really stood out to me.
And I am glad. I was worried by the fact that they were, you know, shattered into ice and all that last episode, that we may not get the resolution this quickly. But I am very glad, because I wouldn't want it dragging on, you know, that Artemis doesn't have her parents and they can't find them and everything. I think this was, it was heartbreaking, but I think it's a good storytelling perspective.
Can I also say, just like, real tour de force by young Stella Smith in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
The way her grief turned to anger, which was also still grief, a couple of times in this episode, just like, it really kicks you in the feel bone.
And then we continue with the sadness and the heartbreak with, you know, Pat's in Stripe and gets a call from Courtney And you don't hear Courtney's side of the conversation. You just see Pat's reaction. And
Mike can kind of sense that something's wrong.
And then Barb gets a call and you see her getting emotional at work. But she doesn't have a lot of time to process because then one of her coworkers comes up and, you know, you're never going to believe it. He's back. Jordan's here.
Yeah. Okay. I have a couple of things to say. One.
Okay.
That woman needs to read a face.
Yes.
Like, this woman is clearly distraught about something. And you're all like, hey, la-di-da, something's great. Barbara never got to process. Like, she never got to have that grief.
Yeah.
She had to immediately spring into, like, defensive mode, figuring stuff out mode.
And we haven't seen Barbara have another friend besides Paula.
No.
Like, this has got to be devastating.
Unless you count Tim Tattle.
I don't.
So there actually is one of her coworkers at the American Dream is someone she went to high school with.
Oh, okay.
But all those scenes where they discuss having gone to high school together and stuff ended up not making the final cuts.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, who's to say they're friends now? She certainly isn't going out and hanging out with anybody.
True.
I think regardless of that, Paula is still pretty much her only friend. Her only good friend in Blue Valley.
Yeah.
And a new one at that. And she's just found out that she's gone. And the person that murdered her is suddenly like in front of her. So with everything that she's experienced with Jordan, she's obviously processing immediately. Oh, you killed my friend.
Yeah.
After you tried to kill me and my husband and my daughter and 25 million other people, not an exaggeration.
Ugh, he's the worst. But he follows Barb into her office and he's saying that he wants his life back and people love him. They're going to accept him. They've already accepted him. She calls him pure evil. She did this with the shade too. She comes in hot and tells it as it is. And I'm like, maybe if you're trapped in a room alone with these people, you should be a little more strategic in your talking, but she doesn't hold back.
Well, with Icicle, I think that she knows that if he wanted to kill her, it doesn't matter. She's not going to provoke him into killing her with whatever she says. And if he was planning on it anyway, then it's going to happen.
Yeah. And right now she is angry and she's upset and she is, you know, in mourning for her friend, and she probably a little bit of her wants to maybe get payback.
And, you know, it is weird. You said that thing about him mentioning that everyone in Blue Valley loves him. That really sort of undercuts everything else he says in this scene, because that seems like a brag. Like, hey, yeah, whatever you think, the people of Blue Valley love me, so they'll go along with whatever I say.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts making the argument like, your daughter has inspired me. I'm really not buying it.
So, okay, I guess they knew immediately that he was the one that was spying on everyone. That's just fast for them to put it all together. I wonder who they thought it was before he made his appearance back at the American Dream.
They didn't have the first clue, I would think. I mean, I don't think that what they found in of the Crocs. I'm trying to be delicate about this. Like, I just realized that I'm trying to speak delicately about their death as if they're real people.
Yeah.
That's some good writing right there.
It really is.
I don't think what they found of their remains indicated ice death in any way.
Right.
Because that wasn't ice. It was some sort of, I don't know, maybe it was their bones having been frozen and made brittle and shattered, because it wasn't anything that was frozen that could melt.
Yeah.
Or it would have melted. I don't think we're meant to think that, like, they looked down and went, oh, they got frozen to death.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's what I wasn't putting together.
Obviously, as soon as Jordan shows up, then we know what the deal is.
Yeah. And he offers his help with Ultra Humanite, said that the Ultra Humanite followed Sylvester here. And that he hated the ISA as well, and so he wants to help take him down. And then this was the point where she says, you froze Croc and Paula, and I believed him up until this point. But he says, I didn't want to kill them. They came in too fast. It was terrible. Lies, lies, lies.
So maybe they were noticeably frozen and the kids just thought, I don't know, maybe they thought it was one of the other McKents.
Well, yeah, that's what I was wondering about, if they were going to accuse any of them. But they also have a habit of, as soon as a, you know, a villain is introduced, they assume that that's the one behind everything.
I mean, it's fair.
I mean, it worked out in this one. He admitted to killing them, just not to wanting to kill them.
I mean, look, if your neighbor got murdered and then a murderer showed up in your neighborhood, you're going to assume that murderer is probably the one that did the murder to your neighbor.
But I mean, somewhere like Blue Valley, there's a lot of murderers that hang out around there.
There's like 14 people in that town and they're all murderers. I mean, let's not gloss over the fact that the people we're mourning right now, also murderers.
Yeah.
We watched them murder one innocent coach. They referenced two previous innocent coaches. They killed a less innocent Anaya Bowen. I think that's all the murders we actually saw them do.
Yeah, I think so.
But I'm sure there are more. But they got better.
They did.
Also, the murdered person that this whole murder mystery was about, the gambler, also a murderer. We saw him murder at least two people, both of them just innocent workers, maybe corrupt. But yeah, one by poison, one by gun.
Look at the JSA. You got Yolanda and Mike.
Yeah.
And Starman, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Bruce Gordon for a minute there.
Yeah.
A lot of murderers. Though, I still don't think that Yolanda had any other choice. And Mike's was an accident.
It's true.
I mean, look, if Yolanda hadn't done that, she would have been dead seconds later.
Oh, absolutely.
And then 10 minutes later, all her friends would have been dead.
I'm not saying that she was wrong.
And then 25 million people would have been dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, full-on self-defense camp right there.
So when Courtney calls Starman, when he's out at the barn trying to check out to see if Ultra Humanite is still there.
Is it Courtney or was it Pat?
I thought Courtney called because she tells him Icicle's back.
You're right. They do show the other side of the call. I was misremembering, but I looked at my notes from like half an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvester goes to the Edder farm. Court tells him Icicle is back. He blows up the barn. So, yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to doubt you.
No, that's fine. Yeah, so Starman totally handled that as predicted. And then we get the scene with him and Pat down in the basement. And Sylvester is, you know, rightfully very upset about the prospect of Icicle possibly working with them, saying that the line needs to be drawn somewhere, and I'm drawing it at the guy who killed me.
I would argue that Sylvester is a little upset at the guy who killed him, like breathing.
Oh, yeah.
I think he draws the line way before working with him.
And his line to Pat, you know, where Pat said, you know, well, we thought that he was dead. Well, you got to check your work, Pat. But also, like, Sylvester, you were dead, and then you came back. Is that on Icicle or whoever actually? Do we know who dealt the killing blow?
It was Icicle. He shot the icicle into him.
Okay. All right.
Went whoosh, and then he fell. And then Pat got him to the car, and then the car crashed. And then not you. Definitely not you. Ugh. I know my impressions are spot on, right?
Close my eyes. I thought Joel McHale was here. So Pat is proposing that they use Icicle, not work with him, to use him to take down Ultra Humanite because they hate each other. They're sworn enemies. They'll take each other out. And Sylvester is like, no, the plan is this. I'm going to go take out Icicle myself, whether anyone approves of it or not.
Yeah, he seems not to have really ever gotten over the whole, like, leadery thing.
Or, you know, being killed thing.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. If anyone here needs therapy, I think it's him.
How's a therapist even help with that?
Yeah, that'd be a little difficult.
You know what, though? It's a comic book world. They got therapists for back from the dead stuff.
Yeah.
People have definitely looked into that.
Oh, for sure. All right. And then we got Cameron coming over to Courtney.
Hey, you remember how I was so mad at you for killing my dad? Well, he's not dead. So, like, we can smooch again.
Yeah. what is he thinking? And he's like, oh, well, she also didn't actually kill him, so I guess I'm cool with her now. It was just her brother.
Yeah, it's like the last words he said to her were, I never want to see you again. And then regardless of the rest of the events that have happened, she's supposed to just be like welcoming back, like, oh, so you want to see me now because your dad's alive. That's great. I'm so glad. Let's have this perfectly healthy relationship without talking things through first.
Yeah. And he calls her out where she's like, you know, he hasn't taken accountability for his actions. You know, your dad was not a good guy. And Cameron's like, well, where was that for the Crocs? Where was that for Cindy? And I'm like, but the Crocs and Cindy both helped take down Eclipso and dedicated themselves to becoming better people.
Yeah.
All your dad's done is shown up and said some words.
Well, he was actually doing the being a better person thing while he was a terrible murderer. I mean, he almost single-handedly rebuilt Blue Valley's economy and vibrance, helped all kinds of people with their jobs. Like, he did a lot of good things, honestly.
He did, but that doesn't make up for all the bad stuff.
No.
The other Cindy and the Crocs gave up the bad stuff to focus on the good.
What we saw the Crocs doing last episode, where they're like all integrated with the community, you know, going to events, they're jogging and play punching with the cop.
Oh, yeah.
All of that, like, that was Jordan's whole thing for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Blue Valley loves him.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, right until the end, honestly, he was going out of town to murder people.
Yeah, that's true.
That's considerate, I guess. Considerate murder. It's a weird conversation.
I don't know that I would consider it. Considerate?
Considerate to the people of Blue Valley.
No, I know. But
he didn't murder anybody in Blue Valley until the wizard.
I don't know that it's considerate to them. It's just
until Joey, excuse me.
Being a decent person to not kill people.
No, I mean, he was doing murders, but he specifically went out of town to do them. If you're going to murder, that's the most considerate way to do it.
Okay.
You don't murder in your own backyard. Until you need to take out a 10-year-old for some reason. Or however old Joey was. 14, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, more like that.
And then his angry dad. And then his grieving mother. And let's not forget, he did give orders to kill Mike so that he wouldn't have a legacy running around wanting revenge one day.
Speaking of Mike, him and Jakeem are trying to figure out what wish they can do. And they finally decide to wish that Icicle doesn't have his powers so he can't come and kill Mike.
You know what my favorite thing about this was? Jakeem was actually using the pink pen to write down his draft of the wish.
Oh, did he really? I didn't catch that.
He uses it as a pen. I don't know why I suddenly think that is weird.
I mean, yeah, it is a little strange. But Thunderbolt replies and says, I can't take away his ice powers. That would be killing him. And I can't do that.
I love that. That's such a good detail.
Yeah. And I love that it also shows progress that Jakeem made the right wish and he had the intent behind it and everything. Just like Zeke's grandma was talking about with the intent. So that it would have been successful had it not been a wish that would have killed someone.
I think it was specific enough. He didn't.
I never trust anything with Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
He'll find a loophole anyway.
Jakeem seemed a little unsure of himself as he was reading it.
But Mike is mad because he's like, if you don't kill him, I'm going to die. And then more people will die after me.
Yeah. I wonder if they had thought to take away his ice powers without killing him. If that would have worked.
Yeah, I don't know. Or, I feel like that would be a murky area.
Or okay, you can't wish for things twice. Does that count wishes that don't work? Could you say, I wish that Jordan McKen's powers were not keeping him alive and that he could live on his own without his powers? And then go back and make the other wish? Or is that wish already wished, even though it didn't get wished?
I have no idea. I have not read enough Thunderbolt to know what would happen. And is it per person? So if someone else...
Well, only Jakeem can make wishes.
I know, but was it Johnny had it originally?
Johnny Thunder? Mm.
Yeah. If he made a wish, could Jakeem now make that same wish? Is it like per person?
Or I'm going to say it's probably per person because we're talking genies here.
And that's what I was thinking too.
You only get three wishes. Well, then for the genies that only give three wishes.
Right, right.
That's three wishes per person. Yeah, not three wishes ever.
True.
But the best part is, while they're talking about this, Cindy shows up. And the best little, like, two-line delivery is she says, "Let's team up." And the Thunderbolt gasps.
Yes.
That was great. I didn't even need the little hat of Jakeem being like, "She's on my bed."
Oh, I loved his line where she was like, "Okay, the door was unlocked. What if I was Jordan? Where would you be then?" And Jakeem just is like, "We'd be frozen." Just admitting, yep, we don't know what we're doing. That's why we need you.
Yeah, because that lock was going to stop Icicle from getting in if he wanted
to. Of course. And Courtney's out for a stroll. I mean, I know she's a superhero, but it just, why would you walk alone at night when you know murderers are out there? But she does, and of course runs into Jordan at his mural. And she's telling him, "I don't know what you're up to, but we're going to stop you." And he tries to do his own pitch about, "I don't want us to be enemies. Let's be allies."
Sometimes I feel like that's how Courtney greets new people.
That I'm going to stop you.
Yeah. "I don't know what your plan is, but we're going to stop you. I'm just the crossing guard, lady. I don't. My plan is to help kids cross the street. Have a good day."
I would love a villain crossing guard. I think that would be great.
It kind of sounds like a villain name already.
Yeah.
"Beware the crossing guard." Like, throws little stop signs. So Jordan makes his whole case to Courtney about, "I want to do better. I want to turn over a new leaf. All this stuff that I've been hearing works to persuade you because I've been spying on you for however long." And she doesn't seem to buy it. As much as she wants to believe in people, she just can't seem to bring herself to believe in Jordan. Even though in the next scene, she's like, "What if he's not full of crap?" But I feel like she's like trying to be that person, but she still is not buying it.
Oh yeah, this was her first big bad. She became Stargirl to stop him. I feel like you're always going to have a little bit of extra not hatred, because I don't think she hates him. Extra caution around that person.
Well, I mean, she does say, like, "I know you." And that's a good point. Like, or was that Barbara that said, I know you?
I know Barbara did. I don't remember if Courtney did.
But, you know, the point is, like, they do. They know him. They know that he's willing to do whatever he has to, kill whoever he has to, in order to do what he thinks is going to help. He just doesn't see the cost as being too high.
Yeah.
And that's just not the kind of person that you can persuade.
No.
I mean, if your starting point is 25 million people is a small price to pay for literally anything, there's no right way to end that sentence, then that you just can't come to an agreement with that person.
No, I don't think so either. I thought it was interesting that he was saying, "Not asking you to forget, just hoping you'll forgive me. We can work together. And then you and Cameron can start up again." Like, that's weird. Why are you really pushing your son to date her?
You know, it's just manipulation. You know, if you just overlook all these murders I did and tried to do, then maybe you can do some smooching with my son.
That's so creepy.
You guys can go to the prom together, maybe. I don't know what this voice is.
Yeah, it doesn't sound anything like Jordan.
It's like Jon Stewart's Jewish grandmother voice.
Yeah. All right, and then here came the tears with Artemis alone in her room.
Oh, man, she was trying so hard to hold it back. It's like, you know, I'll work out with this kettlebell. And, I mean, she's got some rage in her.
yeah, throws that around, and I love that Barb's the one that came over and tells her that she needs to come back over and gives her a hug and comforts her. I think that was very important for Artemis, because I'm sure Artemis saw her as a maternal figure in her life, with how close, you know, how much we saw how much she knew about Croc and Pat being friends. She had to know that Paula and Barbara were friends too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like the Crocs, now that their secret was out, I think the Crocs like really opened up to Artemis about all kinds of things, probably.
Yeah.
And she had to know that Barbara's the person out of everybody that probably misses her mom as close to what she does as anyone else could possibly. Yeah. Still nowhere near close, like
right.
Mother, friend, but still like that's the closest grief connection she has, I guess.
And that family is loyal to a fault. And so often people will shove people away when they're in grief and in mourning. And so I kind of expected her to do that, but Artemis just instinctively trusts Barbara. And so I thought that was a really good scene. And it was very believable too.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, she is a 15 or 16 year old teenage girl.
Yeah.
And I just have to say it again, like Stella Smith really killing it this episode.
Oh yeah.
All three seasons, I would say Stella hasn't gotten as much screen time as we would have all liked to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because Artemis is a great character. I would have loved to see a lot more of her. Stella's a great actress. She had a lot of screen time in Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
She's great. I would have loved to see more of her, but at least now we're getting high concentrations of how great she is.
Yes, absolutely.
Still not a lot of screen time, but like really owning the screen time she does get.
Oh yeah, she's making it count.
And not just her. Yvette Monreal killing me without saying a word.
I had to pretend that I didn't know her mom, because I'm like, her mom does not deserve this. But I think it's very believable that Yolanda had this reaction after just seeing someone lose her parents of wanting to reach out to hers.
Yeah. And saying like, I only lied to you to protect you. Because she's thinking like, had things gone differently, had I let my mother in, it might be me grieving my parents right now.
Mm-hmm.
And God, that girl can break your heart without a word, without a sound.
Yeah, that was a really powerful scene.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I can say. Like, oh my God, I'm kind of misting up a little bit just right now, just thinking about those back-to-back performances.
And then we continue with emotional scenes with Sylvester pleading to Courtney to let him take the staff, face the man who killed me and my friends. It's like, it's very hard to argue with that.
Yeah, he managed to dial back the anger.
Yeah.
And make it about grief in that moment.
And I think that's what it was all about. And he just, you know, gets angry very easily. But yeah, the fact that he did not just take the staff and run. He actually is trying to play by the rules and talk to Courtney about it to get her permission before he goes and does it. I mean, that's huge growth for him. And you can see just the pain that he's in.
I also love Courtney's response, which is to look to Pat for guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Pat can be a little inscrutable sometimes. But I feel like his face was like, you know what the right choice is.
But she doesn't actually verbalize an answer here.
No, because we got to leave some stuff for next week, I guess.
Yeah. We go to the woods and Jordan is out there walking. And I had flashbacks to the first season because he left like the giant ice star in the woods pretty early on to like get Stargirl's attention. And so I was kind of thinking, like, drawing connections to him being out there and up to no good. And it's true. He was out there meeting up with Ultra Humanite, saying it's time.
Now, what he meant was, it's time for us to fight, because I am supposed to take you down and be a good guy now.
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, no, that's... I wasn't even convinced by myself. So yeah, not super shocking. I think all of us are court. All of us are like, it would be nice if he meant these things he's saying, but I just feel like maybe he wants to murder people. You know, for the greater good.
Ugh, he's such an evil villain.
He is. And my favorite thing about him and about well-written villains in general is that he's the hero of his own story.
Mm-hmm.
To him, he's just willing to do whatever it takes to help people and doesn't understand why more people aren't willing to go to those lengths for what is objectively good goals.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Ra's al Ghul. Same exact thing. Except that dude wanted to kill like half the world.
Yeah, I was thinking he's like a Killmonger. Just in the fact that you can see his point. And you can kind of agree with it. But just going about it in the wrong way.
The cost is too high. I would have loved... for the ISA, I gotta be careful how I say this. I would have loved for the ISA to have achieved their goals in a bloodless way without mind controlling anyone.
That would have been great.
No death. Like, good goals. Bad methodology.
Yeah.
Bad. Bad methodology.
Very bad. We do not condone it at all.
I want to be on record as saying I do not condone genocide. A hard take, I know.
Yeah.
Hot take, excuse me. I don't know the lingos. All these young children these days. So that's it. So yeah, let's find out if Yvette Monreal can make us cry in person as well as she does on camera.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
Okay, guys. As promised and completely on schedule, not at all late, I'm here with Yvette Monreal. Yvette, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here. Excuse my voice. I lost it over the weekend.
I should let everyone know, because they can't see you. Yvette is very sick and looking way more beautiful than anyone that sick has any right to look.
Thank you, Sean. You're so sweet.
Stunning movie star looks. Ugh, it makes me sick.
I can't even laugh.
So let's jump in. First, I have to say that you as Yolanda have been killing it this season. And my favorite thing is that Yolanda has not been racked by guilt and remorse this season. She kind of is getting back into being herself.
Yeah, you know, I think that comes from, you know, mind over matter. I feel like the JSA is so near and dear to her heart that right now, I feel like in the beginning of, not in the beginning of Stargirl, but like the beginning of Yolanda's journey when she was with Brainwave Jr. and, you know, pre-trauma, Yolanda, she was very trusting with people. And I think that's how she got herself into that mess of releasing her nudes and all that. So she's very much changed her mindset of, you know, guilty until proven innocent. I think Rick is on the same page. And it's just, I think, a matter of like wanting to protect the new little family that she's built. And I feel like Meg's character, you know, she's amazing at it. She's proven to her time and time again that she's untrustworthy. So why even go into that rabbit hole of giving someone like that a chance, you know? It's like, I feel like I can already predict what's going to happen. You know, Breck, Courtney's character, she sees the light in everything and second chances and everything. So I think it's just me trying to protect any danger from coming into that little world that we've built. And I don't believe that Cindy Berman deserves another chance from me. And I think it's more, might be a little bit selfish, but it's overall to protect what she's built. It was really fun, though, having that dynamic with Meg, because as I was talking to you before this, Meg and I were so close and we love each other dearly. And so having those fight scenes, having those stare downs, it was such a fun time. And we really got into it, but we trusted each other to go there, you know, and we knew it was just fun. And we would giggle after, and it was just a good time to do that with one of your best friends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you guys had your first like big fight together, just the two of you.
My gosh, and that was the most epic scene ever. It was one of my favorites this season. I mean, just the choreography, obviously, you know, Walter Garcia. Yeah, he never ceases to amaze me. The choreography was insane. And the stunt doubles, obviously, Kira O'Connor was so amazing. I think Lauren did Meg's part. Yeah. Lauren, Mary Kim, and Kira O'Connor, they were insane stunt doubles, and they worked their butts off, and it's just such a pleasure to have people like that. And Kira's been my stunt double since the beginning, so she really was able to get down Wildcat stance and everything. She taught me so much, and it was so fun to watch and learn, you know, and just become great friends with these people. They really, really maximized their efforts, and it paid off. I think the fight sequences were so epic and fun, and the environment was so cool. Just everybody was putting in all their effort, you know?
Yeah, it was also pretty crazy running into Kira at on the dance floor at DragonCon.
You were there for it all. You're such a good friend. Yeah, that was so fun seeing them. What are the chances of that? I mean, I didn't know any of them liked doing the cons, so that was a really cool surprise.
Yeah, especially in like a room with like 4,000 people in it.
Gosh, it was so hot in those rooms. Yeah, and then she's just standing there right in front of us. So funny. But yeah, I guess she goes to the Dragon Cons every year, so that's pretty cool. I would go there again. You like to go there, right, every year?
It's my favorite 5 days of the year. You should definitely come back. Do it.
Oh, I am. I regret not dressing up. I'm going to dress up next time. We're all going to go. Same crew as last time.
Nice. And breakfast Trey, time.
Alcoya. Yeah, and breakfast time, for sure.
And Al can be on the list instead of just showing up.
I know. It was nice of him to show up, but definitely we have to reach that. Because he deserves to be there. We all do.
So are you allowed to talk about what you're working on right now?
Yeah, I am allowed to. I mean, I can't go into detail, obviously, because of it being a pilot and all that good stuff. But yeah, whatever was released online. It's a cool 1 hour drama. It's for HBO Max. It's called More. Yesterday I was doing the camera test all day, so that's why I couldn't do the interview yesterday. But yeah, I was done like at 8. It was such a long, long test. But yeah, it's going to be fun. It's a 1 hour drama, but there's a lot of like comedic points in it. And we have such good writers. Amy Chozick, she's insane. I'm really excited about this. And the people who are cast in it, they're fantastic. And they're so welcoming and nice. And I'm just hoping, you know, Stargirl really did set the bar high. So I'm just hoping that we just have a good time, no drama, bunch of good stuff.
So any idea on when, I don't know how it works with pilots on streaming. Do they have the same like upfronts kind of thing? And
you know what? I'm not sure, but if we were to, well, we start filming end of November and then stop mid-December. So they have up to 6 months to tell us if we get picked up or not. But it's really great. The writing is so good. I think I see good things happening, but knock on wood, we don't want to jinx anything. It'll be fun.
On Stargirl, we didn't have a pilot exactly. We shot the pilot and we went straight into episode two. We didn't have to like wait.
I think originally it was supposed to be a pilot. I know some of the castmates were like only signed on for the pilot, later realizing that we were going to shoot the whole series. But that was a blessing in disguise. I'm so glad I went straight to series.
And
got
you
to
know,
meet all people.
I know that our time on the show has come to an end, but you know, three seasons is still good. It's a lot more than a lot of people get. And with a network change in the middle and all the stuff that's happened, it's kind of a miracle to get three seasons under the circumstances.
I know. Absolutely. After season one, I think I knew for sure. I had no doubt in my mind. I was like, oh, we're for sure getting a season two. I felt really sure about that one. Then after season two,
We got picked up for season three before season two came out.
Yes, that's what it was. So that was very, I was so happy about that because it gave me something to look forward to after and it felt like a sure thing. There was a like ominous feeling, not too ominous, but like just, it did feel different at the end of season three. Whereas usually I would leave some stuff at the offices because I knew I was coming back. And this time it just felt like no one said anything or anything, but it did feel different. I was like, why does it feel like it might be an end? I'm just overthinking it. But I did take my Wildcat poster that was hanging in the office.
Nice.
I had a little bit of a feeling.
Bet you wish you'd taken the helmet.
I know. What are they going to do with the costumes now?
I don't know.
Save them for guest appearances, maybe?
Knock wood again. So I'm going to lean back a little bit and relax and just get into chatty mode now.
What else should we talk about?
Other than working on your new pilot and mourning Stargirl, what's been going on, dude?
Honestly, this new pilot has taken up a lot of my time, but when I'm not doing that, I'm really just chilling, hanging out with family. That's really all I do. I mean, when it was hotter, I would go to the beach a lot and do that. I mean, I like going to Starbucks, hanging out, reading.
Catching a last minute flight to go see the premiere of Black Adam with your bestie.
That was really fun, Sean. Thank you for segueing into that. That was so much fun. And I flew out to New York. I tried to meet up with Meg, but she wasn't available. And we stayed at this really, really nice hotel. It's called the Knickerbockle. And it was a few streets down from where the premiere was. And when we went to walk the carpet, once the movie started, I had to use a restroom. I think Breck told you about this a little bit, but...
Oh, yeah, we got to hear it from the source, though.
From the source herself. I had to use the bathroom. It was 20 minutes into the movie, you know. Dwayne Johnson, aka The Rock, had just finished giving his beautiful speech about how much Black Adam meant to him and how excited he was to share it with everyone. And I had to go to the bathroom 20 minutes after, and I walked down the hallway and I see Dwayne Johnson. You know what? He gave off a very cool vibe and was just super open and talking to anybody and everybody. He was not being like, you know, some people just don't want to be talked to and try to hide off the side. That was not him. He was very warm and welcoming. And he was on his phone. And then I just tapped him on the shoulder. I said, hey. He's like, oh, hi. And I said, you know, I'm part of the JSA too, right? And he goes, oh yeah, how so? And I said, we shoot. I'm on the show called Stargirl. I'm actually here with Stargirl herself. She's over there. And I play Wildcat. He's like, oh my gosh, Stargirl, yeah. So he definitely heard of the show. And he's like, you guys are filming in Atlanta. I said, yeah, we're filming in Atlanta. He's like, how do you like it? And at first I thought he was talking about the movie. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. I love everything. He's like, no, being a superhero. And I was like, honestly, it's one of the best roles I've ever had in my life. And he was like, oh, it's so great to hear. I was like, okay, well, I have to go to the restroom now. He's like, you go do that. Bye. So I left and it was very chill, very mellow. And I went back to my seat once I was done using the restroom. And I told Breck, I was like, hey, I just talked to The Rock. She was like, no, you didn't. She did not believe me. And she still, I think she still to this day doesn't believe me. But I promise that I talked to him. And he was very nice. And I only have nice things to say about him. It's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Breck told me that she was supposed to be in the Black Adam movie.
Yeah. I don't know about her, but Stargirl was supposed to be.
Stargirl, the character, yeah. No, that's still awesome.
And of course, that does mean Breck, because Breck is the only Stargirl for all time.
Exactly.
Did you know in the new Stargirl comic that isn't based on the show, but still, like, Blue Valley is drawn to look like Blue Valley, and Courtney's room is drawn to look like Courtney's room, even with that little owl statue under the lamp?
What?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I didn't even know a new comic book was released.
Yeah, the first issue just came out this past Tuesday.
Wow. Oh.
And Jeff wrote it.
I was going to ask, obviously, though. I was like, is that a dumb question? But yeah, that is so cool.
Yeah, Jeff's very busy. He's got a new comic coming out called for Image called Junkyard Joe. He's got this Stargirl comic, which is a 6-issue series, and he's got a new Justice Society series coming out like today, maybe.
Insane. Insane. That man, he's the best.
Oh, and he has a new TV series as well.
Oh, of course.
In development. Let's not forget that.
Jesus. He's busy, busy.
Yeah.
It's hard. He's so great. I like working with him.
Hard to get him on a Zoom, I'll tell you that. But it's coming.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Maybe just be like, hey, a little 15 minute.
Can you believe we only have 2 episodes left?
No, say it ain't so, Sean.
I'm afraid.
Say it ain't so.
I'm afraid it is so. And all the fans, of course, are not giving up. They're still hashtagging Save Stargirl all the time.
You know what? I'm hashtagging Save Stargirl all the time. You know, it would have been nice to go back and just do a last little mini goodbye, but everyone's happy with the 3 seasons. And Jeff said that he was very happy with how season 3 ended. I'm sorry, Sean. My voice is really messed up, isn't it?
You sound lovely.
I feel hindered. I feel very hindered right now.
Well, I mean, that's like part of your toolbox, your voice.
I know. Maybe I'll just do the rest of the interview whispering so I don't strain myself.
Yeah. It'll be like a secret conversation.
Secret conversation, guys.
These people are not supposed to be hearing this. It's all just hush hush between us.
I have more secrets to release. What should I say about my character? Should I spoil anything? I'm kidding.
We don't do spoilers on this show.
I know. You care about us.
In terms of having a little goodbye, though, I do think that we should do that on this podcast. We should have as many cast members as we can come on and say a few final words of goodbye to the fans, to each other, to the show, once the season's over.
I think everyone would love that.
I think that we're in a unique position as a podcast to be able to do that. I don't think most podcasts, when their show end, have any chance of doing that. And so I would like to take advantage of that and give the show a proper send-off.
Wait, so what's going to happen after season 3 is done? Are you done with Stargirl podcast?
We're going to do one more episode as a send-off, and then that's it. There's no more to talk about.
Say it ain't so. What about the JSA comics coming out? Keep it alive, Sean. Keep it alive.
It's a different universe. This is the universe I signed up for. I'll have to find some other outlet for all my nerdiness. I do have that other podcast I haven't done in like 2 years. Let's start that back up.
There you go. I mean, it's if you're going to ever start it, now's the time.
Yeah.
Just consistency is key. I know, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm being a lame-o right now. I feel like I...
No, this is what I wanted. I just wanted to talk to you, Yvette, and have you on. And I also, by the way, I love that you're wearing sunglasses that sort of make it look like you just... No, it makes you look like you just finished shooting some Wildcat stuff.
This is the real me. This is sick, Yvette. I look crazy. I look like a crazy girl.
What are you talking about?
I do. I look crazy.
You look beautiful. Knock it off.
Let me see 1 second.
But the big black circles from your glasses made it look like, you know, you just took off your Wildcat helmet.
Oh my gosh, my Wildcat helmet. It's the best. My little cowl.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah, you know what? Good job calling me out. It's a cowl. It's not a helmet. I should know better.
I learned that. I didn't know what a cowl was either, so don't feel too bad. It definitely came with all the... I learned it as time went on, and like how it was mentioned so much in the script. I was like, this is a cowl. I would use helmet before, same, so don't feel bad.
Well, as a diehard Batman reader for 33 years, I've long known what a cowl is, and I should have known the difference.
That's true. You are really good at your comics.
Yeah, I'm good at my comics.
You're good at your comics? Did I say that wrong? You're making fun of me, Sean.
Just a little bit.
Rude.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you become too friendly with your interviewer. They make fun of you a little bit.
I do have to say, though, this episode 11, Artemis finding her parents' remains was very heartbreaking, and she delivered it beautifully. She did such a good job with everything. It was so fun to watch her. She's going to be a little star, Stella. That Stella girl.
I think there are a lot of big stars that are going to come out of this show.
Absolutely.
Like, everyone is so talented, and like, no one is an asshole, which is really going to help everyone get far.
I think so. I mean, I've learned that the world goes round in this industry. So, you know, you really have to... being nice goes very far. And there's no reason to treat anybody differently just because you guys have different positions on a show. You know, it doesn't make sense. Humans are humans. And I don't know. I learn a lot from just watching people, too. And see, like, if they're nice to me, cool. But then if they treat, like, you know, that's that old saying goes, like, if they treat the waiter at the restaurant poorly, it's like, that speaks volumes. I don't like seeing that. It's not cool.
Yeah, especially from actors who have almost universally all worked at restaurants at some point. Yeah.
My first restaurant was Islands.
So you did work at a restaurant?
I did. I worked at Islands. And I remember I was the back server, so I was the one who handed out the trays to the servers so they could put it on people's tables. And one time, this has nothing to do with anything, so sorry, but one time the to-go person didn't show up, and I was back serving by myself. And there, it was a very busy night. I was putting everything in place for the waiters. As I was doing to-go, that was my first time doing to-go orders, and I got written up because it looked like I wasn't trying hard enough. It looked specifically, she got written up because she didn't care enough. I was bawling in tears, crying, and I was like, I hate this place. And I quit, and I went to go work at a movie theater instead, which was pretty cool. Top free movies. It was Arclight.
Oh, you worked at the Arclight.
Yeah, it was the Arclight in Manhattan Beach.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
I've only been to the Cinerama Dome Arclight.
Cinerama Dome. I think I've been there too.
That's when I visited LA, that's where I went and saw all my movies.
There you go. I actually had my first indie movie premiere at an Arclight in Hollywood. And it was just so full circle because working at the movie theater, then having a movie that you're in be in such a huge, you know, Arclight to me was just one of the big theaters. Like, wow, this is pretty nice. For it to be like the center, it was, I don't know, it was an incredible experience. It was so cool. I was like, wow, I used to work here. Now I'm having a movie shown in one of the movie theaters. It's pretty cool. It was that movie I did with Eva Longoria and Damien Bashir. It was called Lowriders. It was a fun little one that I did back in the day.
When I did my first feature, I also worked at a movie theater for like 15 years, though.
Isn't it great, kind of?
I worked for a different company, and that company recently declared bankruptcy, and I was like, good, that's what they deserve.
Oh, no, you had a bad experience.
It was good experiences for a few years, and then it got bad and then worse, and then I quit without notice to come actually make movies. So, you know.
Right.
But when I did my first feature, I was like, back at that theater that I quit without notice, my name is going to be in those end credits. Not as cool as your thing, but like, I experienced, you know, a percentage of that, just knowing that someone could be cleaning that theater and look up and see my name and go, hey, well, he worked here.
Honestly, I always watch the end credits. Even before I started acting, I was like, I want to watch the end credits. And then I like looking people up and just being like, oh, that's cool. Oh, they worked on this, they worked on that. So that's pretty cool, Sean.
I like watching the credits to see, you know, people's names I know, like personally know, because half of all movies, it seems, are shot in Atlanta. So
they are.
It's a lot of people that I've worked with a lot of the time.
I know. That's why I'm keeping my condo there.
Isn't it also bananas that Black Adam was shot here? Because it takes place in like a Middle Eastern country and nothing of it looks remotely like Atlanta.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. It's,
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Were there studios? It looked like a lot of it was, you know, green screen.
Yeah, it was shot down at Trilith, formerly Pinewood.
God, yeah.
But they had to have done some, like, outside stuff, right? They wouldn't shoot the whole movie on a studio.
Maybe the house was on location. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I just saw it, like, two nights ago.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was exactly what I expected it would be. Hashtag not my JSA.
Yeah. I am excited about the next movie, though, because Superman comes in.
Yeah, apparently. Henry Cavill's talked about how he wants his next Superman thing to be, like, more hopeful and joyful, like Superman. And I've always thought that he was, like, really, really fantastic casting for Superman. And I don't think he's been allowed to be Superman in any of the movies he's been in. He seemed like Superman in the end credits of Black Adam, though. When he popped up in that scene, I was like, oh, look, he's Superman. He's not just some grim, moody dude dressed as Superman.
Yeah, I heard it was really hard to get him.
He's been a busy guy, too. So, when did you find out that for sure we were not getting a fourth season?
When I was cast for this pilot. This pilot had to be put in second position because of Stargirl. But I was like, hey, like, I don't want it to interfere. And Jeff did give me the green light to work on the pilot. And he said that he'd, like, ride around if we did go for another season. But it was so up in the air. They just didn't want to confirm it to any of us. I don't know. I had a feeling when we wrapped, but I don't think I wanted to believe it. But yeah, I found out 2 days before the press release was given out. Jeff called us and told us it wasn't happening anymore and that he really, really tried his hardest. And I believe him. And yeah, it really made me emotional because Wildcat and Yolanda Montez really changed my life for the better. So it was very emotional. That phone call, I was in my car, I was crying. But it, nonetheless, it did so many great things for me. And it really opened me up as a person and built so many great relationships on this show. I wouldn't change it. And like you said, we did a really great run. Three seasons is more than a lot of shows on air, you know, so I'm just grateful. But I had hope for a silver lining because of how great the show was. And I knew Jeff had a great idea with the fourth season. I just wanted it to happen. But yeah, 2 days before Deadline released an article, that's when I knew for sure, for sure. But like I said, I did take the poster in the office at the end of the season just in case. Because I was like, if we go again, that's an easy print again. They could just print it another one out.
Yeah, right in the art department. Don't even need to send out.
So, yeah. What about you? When did you know?
About an hour before the press release went out. Jeff had emailed me late the night before, like 1:40 in the morning my time. To let me know. So I had just enough time in the morning before the press release went out to compose my thoughts to put on Twitter to let people know. So as soon as the press release went live, I was able to put out a little tweet thread. And, you know, let everybody know how much we all appreciate them and what a great time we all had. And it's sad that we won't all be together on something again in the future, but like also I'm sure that I will work with all of you again at some point, because they're not going to stop making stuff in Atlanta.
Absolutely. Yesterday, I ran into the DP. His name is Doug. I'd worked with him on my very first show called Faking It. And I was like looking at him in his mask. I was like, I feel like I know you. And he's like, I don't know. My name's Doug. I was like, wait, I don't know how this clicked, but I was like, were you the DP on Faking It? And all of a sudden we were like, oh my God. So yes, it definitely comes back around. The industry, I feel like it's a lot smaller than it's made out to be. And I do strongly believe we'll work together again, John.
I mean, look, you even bring your dog to the vet where Tim Gabriel works.
What? How did you know that?
Because, of course, I had him on the podcast as well.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
This podcast is actually all about people talking about Yvette Monreal. All the interviews are just about you.
That's so funny. Oh my God. Yeah, I remember. I was fostering a dog. And then I was fostering a dog through this foundation. And I took him in for the vet. And there was this man and woman teaming up to make sure the dog was okay and everything. And his weight was fine. As soon as I left, the foundation texted me like, hey, this is completely random, but Obsidian was your vet. I was like, what? Yeah, Obsidian was your vet. I was like, and I looked up Obsidian. I was like, Obsidian. I was like, oh my God. And then I put two and two together. I was like, tell him I said hi. That's so crazy. I didn't recognize him. I didn't have any scenes with him, but that's so awesome. So it really, really is a small world. Like, we worked on that show in Atlanta and we saw each other in Culver City. What are the odds?
Yeah, he said that he saw you, and while you were there, he was like, I think that's Yvette, but like, I don't want to bother her. And once you left, he was like, what was her name? And they looked it up. And he's like, it was her.
Yeah, I know. I wish he would have said something. I didn't get to see him at all on the show.
Yeah, it's I told him, you know, if he ever sees you again, that he should talk to you because you're completely approachable and wonderful, and you would never get mad at that.
I know. It's the glasses. I'm always in sunglasses. Sometimes a hat. And then my face just rests in a very frowny face way. So probably that's why. But I am very approachable. I don't really get many people coming up to me for Stargirl. Well, like if I was, you know, like Stranger Things, like you said, that's a whole nother beast. So,
I mean, that doesn't even begin to touch on the fact that Stargirl should, by every measure, be as big as Stranger Things. It's a whole other conversation.
It's going to be a classic. And it'll make its way around again, I think. It'll stand the test of time.
Oh, for sure. I listen to some podcasts where they talk about all sorts of superhero TV shows and movies. And yeah. When the cancellation happened, or the not renewal, not a cancellation, just a not renewal.
Oh.
I don't know what the difference is, honestly, but that's how I'm thinking of it in my brain. They were all like, it's literally one of the best superhero shows that I've ever seen in my life. It's crazy that they're not getting another season. And, you know, obviously I agree.
I agree as well. But, you know, we did what we had to do. It was a great time. And I will forever be mourning Sad Girl. I will forever be mourning Star Girl. I'm so silly.
No, you will be a sad girl.
I will be a sad girl. Morning Star Girl. John, if you want to redo this podcast, trust me, give me a couple of days. I feel like I suck right now.
No, I think you're wonderful. I like the flubs too. I'm not polishing you.
It's okay. I don't need to be polished. This is me. This is the real me. My gosh.
Yvette, I know that you need your voice to do your job. So I'm going to let you get to resting that voice, drink some more tea, have some like honey and chamomile and stuff. I do want to thank you for coming on again, and let's try to make something happen at the end of the season so you can say with your real proper voice a proper goodbye to all the fans.
Okay, sounds good. I guess I'll go rest my voice. I was having so much fun.
Stargirl After Show.
So wasn't that a great interview, or maybe not?
I enjoyed it.
Or not, if there wasn't one. Who knows?
Yeah. All right, so Sean, if people want to find you elsewhere on the internet, where should they look?
You mean like me or my stuff? What, with the whole Twitter thing? What do you think we should do?
I guess your stuff.
Okay, my stuff is and remains at fandomlim.com, where I have my other podcast. I forgot the word podcast, where I have my other podcast, Table Reads, and my monthly podcast, which is still being updated, unlike Table Reads, which will be updated eventually, but probably not until this podcast is done.
But you got plenty of back episodes for people to listen to.
That's true. We have like 140 episodes almost. And some of them are like long. So go listen to them. There's a lot. Sarah, where on fandomlim.com can people find your stuff?
So you can find me at A Swift Review and What's New Nancy Drew. Season 4 is going to be coming up of Nancy Drew. So we'll be covering that. And in the meantime, we got a few things planned. So definitely, go check it out.
Also, if you want to find me on Reddit, I'm The Jedi Bugs. That's Jedi like Skywalker, you know, and Bugs like Bugs Bunny.
Okay.
The Jedi Bugs, because I had Jedi Bugs and then I forgot the password and then I could never get back in.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's funny.
I don't know if we should start a Stargirl Discord or join one already in progress. We should look into that.
Yeah, people who are on Discord, chime in and say what you think would be best.
Yeah.
For now, reach out to us on Twitter.
Yes, at StargirlPod. Also, don't forget that we have merch at StargirlAfterShow.com/shop. And rate and review us, because that seems like it still matters somehow.
Yeah. Did you see the flowers my husband got me?
I did. I saw it and I was like, I don't remember getting flowers.
Yeah, he since all of my shows have now been canceled for all my podcasts, my other co-host Ben came over, and so my husband got him a Nancy Drew bouquet of flowers that had a magnifying glass in it, and then he got me a Stargirl bouquet.
Nice.
With a little star in it. It was very nice. A nice little closure. But we still got 2 episodes left here. No, 3. No. We do have 2.
Oh my God. Is it just down to 12 right. and 13? Oh man. I'm getting, well, 3 episodes of the podcast.
Yes.
We've got 12 and 13 left of Stargirl, and then we'll have our retrospective. We're going to talk about the whole season, the whole series. And we're going to have some very special guests to probably make us cry for real.
Oh yeah. I mean, I already cried when we talked with Brock.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm going to cry again.
Gosh, such a bummer.
But next week's episode title should perk us up a bit, right?
Oh, yeah. It's really uplifting. Join us next week for Stargirl Frenemies Chapter 12. The last will and testament of Sylvester Pemberton.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
Hmm. Well, we'll see you next week. Until then, have a super great day.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.